This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580, the Information Advantage. Celeste Quinn is away. I'm Tom Rogers. You can find some of the most interesting things right under your nose. Robin Kaler and Todd Wilson are two members of the University of Illinois News Bureau who look for some exciting travel destinations, but they didn't have to board planes or change currencies to do it. They just got in the car and traveled the two states of Illinois and Indiana, finding the best places to visit, where to stay, and where to eat. Yeah, they found a lot, of course, in Chicago and Indianapolis, as you would assume, but they also found fun outside the usual tourist spots. They're here to talk about their findings in a book that's part of the Travel Smart series, titled simply Illinois, Indiana. And they will be talking about what they found and what might be interesting if you plan your own jaunt through the two states. And if you have questions for them or suggestions or anything else, give us a call. Your calls are certainly welcome during our interview portion of the Afternoon Magazine. The phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. And if you're outside the Champaign-Urbana area but in the two states, you can call us at 1-800-222-9455. 333-WILL, inside Champaign-Urbana, outside the area, 1-800-222-WILL. Todd Wilson, Robin Kaler, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
How did you get started writing this book? How did you wind up in the travel book industry? You are both journalists by trade and work for the university, but this is something different.
Well, I had a friend from college who was the marketing director for John Muir Publications, and she called one day and said, I know you've talked about writing a book. Would you like to write a travel book? And I said, I don't think so. And she talked to me about it a little bit more, and it sounded like a fun thing. She said that the way John Muir Publications works is they like to hire local authors, and those authors cover their own region that they're familiar with. And so the more we talked about it, the more fun it sounded. And I said, I don't know that I would have the time to do it by myself, so I convinced Todd to work with me on it.
She wanted me to carry her bags.
And do some writing in the meantime.
Absolutely, absolutely.
How do you tackle something like this?
Well, the way we did it, we started off just brainstorming on places, what areas we might want to cover, because they are sort of short books.
And they gave you an outline, I'm sure, this is what we want to cover.
Not really. They tell you that they want you to cover, you can pick 8 destinations in each of the states, and then they want you to cover attractions, hotels, restaurants, what have you, in those destinations. But we really had to choose the destinations and then brainstorm on the places that we had been with our families or friends or whatever, and then go into reporter mode and just find the places that we, for whatever reason, hadn't visited yet.
The main constraints that they gave us, I think, were pages and words and also time. We had a fairly short amount of time to do this. By the time they found us and hooked up with us, we had 4 or 5 months mm-hmm. to put it together.
How do you balance, places that you know of with going into, like you said, reporter mode and digging up some things that you may not have known of to begin with?
That's a really good question.
I think what we did was, the places we knew about, we already knew whether something was good enough to include in the book. And one thing that Muir tends to do in their books is they don't like to put in places you wouldn't want to go. So that helped narrow down things a lot already. So if there was a restaurant you'd been to and you didn't like it, it's just not in the book. Mm-hmm. There's no place in there that we would say, don't go to this place.
Even if it's a well-known place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even if it's a well-known place.
Do you make mention of it if people will know that this is in a certain town, but you didn't like it?
There was that was kind of a tough line to walk, and I think there may be one or two things in there that we say, it's nice to know that this thing is there, mm-hmm. but you may not need to spend too much time. Or Todd had one. What was it? Was it the ketchup bottle?
I think you're talking about the Coco Motel. I went to Kokomo, Indiana. And there's a lot good about Kokomo, Indiana, even though I went in thinking, what am I going to find here? But I included the Coco Motel just for the name value because I thought it was so neat, but it's really kind of a rundown place, and I wouldn't stay there. So it got credit for the name.
Well, for the name. You can pass by. You can look at the neon sign. I'm familiar with it, actually, just driving through there and get a good laugh and then move on.
Keep going, yeah. Well, and then actually, I think what I was thinking of, the ketchup bottle, it wasn't something that you'd go and spend a day at.
Right. In Collinsville, their water tower is a giant Brooks ketchup bottle, which is locally famous, and it's an interesting piece of 1940s roadside art. But you don't want to tell people that you're driving all this distance to see a ketchup bottle. And so you drive by, you spend a couple of minutes there, and we were asked to include how long you might spend at one of these attractions so you can plan your day. Mm-hmm. For this one, 1 to 4 minutes, depending on how long it takes your dad to focus the camera. If it's my dad, 4 minutes, probably plus.
You mean there are no guided tours or anything? Can't go into the ketchup bottle? But you do order these also in, I guess, order of importance, too. If there's one thing or a couple things you need to see in a certain area, that's it.
Yeah, you do rate them. Mm-hmm. And the things that are absolute must-sees would tend to have more stars than the things that are just kind of nice to know about or maybe would be worth going to if you're spending more than one day in a certain location.
Where are the places you looked for travel destinations when you got into reporter mode?
What we did?
Are you allowed to reveal your sources? that's the question.
Actually, what we did was we pulled out a map of Illinois and a map of Indiana, and we just started looking. And, have you ever been there? I think I've been to the Bluegrass Festival here or this thing there or whatever. And just started marking with push pens on a map and started exploring. We ended up, in fact, I wrote an entire chapter on southern Indiana that was cut for space.
Hmm.
Certainly not because it was poorly written or anything like that. But, yeah, but I mean, there just
isn't
enough room.
Nobody in Southern Indiana should take offense either, I'm sure. But
I hope not, but I'm sure they will. But yeah. I mean, yeah, there just was only the 250-page limit, and we turned in substantially more information than we had to because we had never done one before, and we weren't really sure what they were looking for, and we wanted to make sure that they had enough the first time so we didn't have to go back out and do research again.
Once we were through the pushpin process, we're fortunate to know some people in the travel industry, and so we contacted them and said, can you help us out, and what's good where?
Mm-hmm. Then we hit the road.
And then you hit the road, but you know, just to take it out, I mean, the editing process must have been really tough. To find things that you kind of liked, and the editor comes back and says, don't have the space.
Yeah, and actually our editor didn't even say which things she was going to cut. She just said, it's, 10,000 words too long or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we had to go back and self-edit, and it was like, giving your child up for adoption or something. At that point, it was really painful for both of us to say, and we'd say, I gave up 250 words here, you give up a few over there, or whatever.
So how did you go about traveling? You get in the car.
A lot of weekends, yeah.
There's one thing that you should understand before we get too far down the road in this discussion of travel, and that's mm-hmm. that both Robin and I have small children.
Families, yeah.
And at that time, I was working a job that required a lot of time. 12-hour days were not unusual. So, you find a weekend, and it's a good thing that we were within this two-state region. Mm-hmm. And that's what's great about the book to me is that now even I have a resource for weekend trips, and I'm still in a position where I'm not going to take 2-week vacations, but I can get away. I can get away for a couple of days.
Is that who this book is designed for? Is it designed for people who live inside the area or just outside who can get in the car for a couple of days? Or what use is it perhaps of people outside the area?
Actually, it's for both. Mm-hmm. Their market tends to be more people coming from outside to any particular destination, but that's because the beginning of this series of Travel Smart books tended to be Florida, California, places that are more known as tourist destinations. So we do have information in the beginning of the book. It tells you, where the airports are, what roads you can use, what are the major highways and things like that, how to get around in the states. And then as the book progresses, it also allows you, if you're going to spend a couple of days somewhere, to do that. And then if you want to do a longer route of a trip and maybe hit 3 or 4 destinations. If you start in chapter 1, you can drive through the course of Illinois and end up back where you started, and same thing for Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you have to look at some of the places that everybody knows are tourist areas. Mm-hmm. Lots of people go to Chicago and see things, but a lot of people don't make it outside of Chicago, or mm-hmm. Indianapolis is fairly well known on its own.
Absolutely.
Tourist destination. How did you balance, having to evaluate some of the things in those well-known areas and all the people, the places that people know of, with having to go out and find things outside and make it interesting too?
And actually, the way we divvied the work up, we once we had come up with our 16 destinations, we just divided them. And we said, you take eight, I'll take eight, I'll meet you in 4 months. And so as it ended up, I had Chicago and Indianapolis. So
thank goodness.
Yeah. And those two actually were some of the easiest to write, just because those are places that we both tend to travel to. Todd has a background in Indiana and Illinois both, and I had more Illinois with a little Indiana. And so it was easy to say, you know, I mean, I've been to the Children's Museum in Indiana or Indianapolis and, you know, a lot of those Idle York and places like that. So the hard part was to make the chapter as small as they wanted it. But they did allow us to make the Chicago and Indianapolis chapter about twice as long as the rest. And that was the only allowance they really made for the size.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned 4 months. Come back in 4 months. How long did it take to get this all done? How many weekends did it take to finish this?
About 16, I guess. Yeah.
Just took all the time they would give us. And,
We usually took about a week a destination, and you know, you'd spend the weekend traveling, then you'd write about it the next week. And I mean, we were a lot of long hours. Our families really didn't see a lot of us, and we're very supportive and helpful in that regard.
Did you see everything that's listed in this book? Or?
Not everything. I mean, we've both of us having lived here all our lives, we've been to a lot of places, and so we were able to just kind of update. And unfortunately for us, the time frame in which we were working, there were a lot of destinations that weren't even open. They're closed from Labor Day through Memorial Day, and so it just wasn't feasible to get to them. So places we'd already been, we were able to just follow up with doing our research and making sure that, you know, they still have this roller coaster or that whatever on their menu or something like that.
And you also list things like eating places and hotels, bed and breakfast, that sort of thing.
Obviously, can't you tell by our size that we ate our way through Illinois and Indiana?
Every single restaurant that's in it. How much of that? Yeah, how much of that?
I'm not real sure I like this restaurant. Could I have some more food, please?
Yeah, we've got five other ones to visit for breakfast, so make
exactly.
It quick. How do you decide which ones make it, which ones don't? And I'm sure a lot of this is based on hearsay from people in the town, too.
Right. You know. We, at least the way I worked, I went to a place and I tried to cultivate a couple fast friendships with people who I thought would be in the know and ask their advice. And then I visited the ones that I could visit and chose my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Both of you are... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I always, anytime I go to a restaurant anyway, I'm not much of a risk taker. And so I always ask, what's the most popular thing on your menu? You know, do people ever send it back? And I mean, you know how it is, when you're a reporter, you're always in reporter mode. Mm-hmm. You never can turn it off. I know it drives my husband crazy. Would
drives
you quit interviewing
crazy
people?
Too, huh?
Absolutely. But it does help you glean a lot of information real quickly. So we were able to do a lot of that. You know, you just kind of check. We did a lot of kind of reconnaissance before we went somewhere. You'd see what things you really needed to go to, and then you'd try to throw in a couple that you just passed and said, oh, that looks like fun, or looks like that place is decorated all with pigs or something. Maybe I'll go in there and see what the gig is with that. So
These places have to be interesting to write about as well, and so places that have a hook, not only are they more marketable for their own good, but they're good for us in that they give us something fun to say. We really wanted to write a book that was fun to read, so it's conversational, and we tried to find those kind of places.
Speaking of conversation, we'd like for you to join in the conversation if you have a question or a suggestion on travel destinations in Illinois and Indiana. Our guests are Robin Kaler and Todd Wilson. They're with the University of Illinois News Bureau. They've written a book on their own with the help of John Muir Publications, their Travel Smart Guide to Illinois and Indiana, things to do on a weekend or on a longer trip in the two states. Our numbers, if you have questions or comments, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. Outside the area, 1-800-222-9455. Both of you are news writers.
Have been in the past.
What's the difference between writing for a newspaper, for a radio station, for a news bureau, and writing for a travel book? Or are there many?
Well, length is, is the big one. We both have broadcast journalism background, so that style of writing is conversational and to the point, and most importantly, it's clear because people only have one chance to hear what you have to say and receive the information. And I think that's an advantage in any kind of writing that you do. With the book, obviously, we're detail-oriented. In fact, for every destination, there's a list of you know, the address, the hours that are open, handicap accessible, those kinds of details. Yeah. So I think that our broadcast journalism backgrounds helped us be observant.
And I think good writing is good writing, no matter what format it takes or what medium you use. If you can catch someone's interest and keep it, then I think you've accomplished what you've set out to do.
We have a caller on the line from Urbana this afternoon. A question for Todd Wilson and Robin Kaler on their travel book. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm interested in southern Illinois, particularly the French areas. I'm wondering what you can tell me about that area.
Where are the French areas?
Those French names?
The French names. He's looking them up right now.
Yeah, and I can't remember the name of the town, but my husband and I have often talked about going down there.
Is this in the St. Louis area?
It's in Illinois.
And you'll be traveling with a family, it sounds like.
Pardon?
Sounds like you'll be traveling with a family, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Todd has, he covered mostly the Collinsville area in southern Illinois. As we mentioned earlier, unfortunately, we just weren't able to cover everywhere. So, I don't know that...
Well, Pierre Marquette, does that sound familiar?
And, yep.
You've got Pierre Marquette.
Pierre Marquette is covered in the chapter on the Alton area. And it's a very large and just wonderfully done state park. Alton is really a special area because it grew up across the river from St. Louis. At one time, they competed to be the big city, and obviously St. Louis won, but Alton remained kind of a charming old town, and the same is true for Grafton, which is just up the river from Alton. And then further up the river is Pierre Marquette. So these places tie together into what I think is one of the best destinations in Illinois. If you have a weekend, especially being from this area, you can be there in 4 hours, and there's really a lot to do and a lot of history. There's a lot of underground railroad history there. There's great outdoor attractions with Pierre Marquette and also with the Mississippi River. There's great antiquing there. And the really fascinating history to me is the riverboat captains used Alton as a place to build their homes. And so there are all these great big homes with, you know, balconies where, you know, the riverboat captains are used to standing up high and looking out and surveying. And so there are a lot of bed and breakfasts that have been made from those homes. And really, that's one of the destinations that I highly recommend in Illinois.
Mm, I got my Gazadier, or however you pronounce that word out here. And one other place that sticks out was Prairie du Rocher. Is that not one of the French or...
Prairie du Rocher? Uh-huh. I'm not very familiar with that, and that's not a place that I covered.
Are you looking at areas with French heritage, or...?
Yeah. I can't remember what the magazine was, but we got our hands on a magazine that... had some information about this area in it.
I might suggest then that you consider one of the things that we've included are some touring routes. And the French history in Illinois sprouts from 1673, Pierre Marquette and Louis Joliet navigating, trying to find out if the Mississippi River connected to the Pacific Ocean. And so they discovered a lot of places, and the heritage is still there. And then, of course, the French inhabited this area for some time with the assistance of the Indians. But all along the Mississippi and Illinois rivers, you'll find places of French heritage.
And if I could also recommend, how much of that is around Vincennes? Were you able to get around Vincennes, Indiana?
No, as a matter of fact, that was one of the places that I was really interested in covering for its historical significance, but kind of got cut.
So there is some around there, and unfortunately...
But it sounds like she's going to have to do the breaks every hour at the McDonald Playland, I think. You're going to want that route.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Have fun.
Line 2 is in Champaign this afternoon. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon. I would like to ask the authors if they focus any on camping.
And every destination we do have, if there's camping available, even in Chicago, we have a little bit of camping. The book is not really geared specifically toward campers, though. You will always find campsites, but they're going to tend to be more along the lines of a KOA as opposed to a really primitive one, although we do have some primitive ones listed, and some that have horse trails with them, some that are along canoe routes and that type of thing.
Can I make a couple of suggestions?
Sure, you can. We're getting ready to do the update.
Uh-huh. Let's see, 3 hours from Champaign south is the Shawnee National Forest, mm-hmm. and everything east of Interstate 57 is so totally incredible with the massive sandstone formations. And then 2 hours east of Champaign on Interstate, south of Interstate 70, is Turkey Run and Shades mm-hmm. National Park.
We have all those in there.
And you mentioned Vincennes. I grew up around there. If people might get a chance to visit they could cross over the Red Skelton Bridge. I think a lot of people know who Red Skelton is. And then visit the George and Rogers Clark Memorial, I
George
believe.
Rogers Clark, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's my input.
That's Tom's great-great-grandfather.
haven't checked that out yet.
There's a chapter on Southwest Illinois that... we sort of use Carbondale as the hub for the hub and spoke.
Carbondale is okay with its giant city national park, mm-hmm. but it doesn't even begin to compare to everything east of in Shawnee National Forest, east of I-57.
We include Trail of Tears State Forest, Lake Murfreesboro State Park. There's quite a bit of the Shawnee National Forest in this chapter. And, you know, the difficult thing in writing about a place like Southwest Illinois is that you still have the requirements of finding good lodging and good food. And, frankly, in that area, they're sort of clustered in the Carbondale-Murfreesboro area in Marion. So I concentrated really on the camping and the outdoor activities. And if you get a chance, you might... check that out.
Thanks for your call. Also, you know, where do you find a place to camp in Chicago?
Actually, in Chicago, believe it or not, there's one state park. Then, of course, there's Lake County, which is just
not along
of Chicago.
The lakefront, I would think, like, you know,
no,
you beach or anything like
not
that.
A good idea.
Frown on that.
Yeah, not a good idea at all.
Unless
but there is the
yeah, you'd frown on that too.
The Windy City Beach and Camping Resort. It's on 80th. It's actually in Tinley Park, but that's about the only.
That's
true camping you're going to find,
close in
yeah.
For camping,
but then again, there's Lake County, which, you know, as you know, is just north of Chicago, and there is the Chain of Lakes State Park and Illinois Beach State Park, which has been renovated and is really nice. And we tried to include any time we had camping in the book to give you a range, so that if you were somebody who likes to take the RV and have the generator and plug it in and put your satellite dish up and whatnot, you could do that. But if you also just like to get the rucksack and head out and, you know, with your shovel to dig your own latrine, that you could do that too.
How big of, you know, expansive, unpopulated areas are there in the two states?
There are several, actually. There's some beautiful country in these states. You know, one thing for me, I've lived here the bulk of my life, and I felt like I had done just about all the fun things there were to do around here, and I found out there was a whole world I had never discovered. And
yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. In the beginning, we talk a little bit about the topography and what makes Illinois and Indiana what they are. And it's really interesting to see the difference between southern Illinois and southern and some of central Indiana and the flat areas where we live in Champaign-Urbana. You know, it's a really dramatic difference. It feels like you're driving into Kentucky. And southern Illinois and southern Indiana.
And then even Galena in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Galena is a complete different
mm-hmm.
topography.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you can find the open spaces, and you can find the dense woods, and you can find primitive camping.
And you can find prairie that's in fairly pristine condition. And yeah, I think that just for me, I have always tended to go to the same places I know. And so it was kind of fun to go out and see, you know, I don't have to, I mean, I love Turkey Run, and we go to Turkey Run a lot, or did as children, and but it was kind of nice to see that there were plenty of other places to go to.
And if you drive the interstates all the time through those areas, you don't
miss
see a fraction of what's
you miss
out
a
there.
Lot. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, in fact, there are some travel guides that just take you on back roads of both states, and those are really good ones, too.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine. Our guests are Robin Kaler and Todd Wilson. They've written a book on the Travel Smart series from on Illinois and Indiana, What to See in Our Own Two-State Area. And obviously you said you spent a lot of time in Chicago, spent about a good amount of time in Indianapolis, places that people from outside most quickly associate with the two states. What kinds of things struck you as the most interesting things to see in Chicago? If somebody had only a little bit of time to go there, what would you tell them to go see to get the best feel for Chicago?
Well, I think that, I mean, the number one tourist attraction in Chicago, in my understanding, is Shedd Aquarium, and it's a wonderful place to go and visit. It's they have more people come through than any other attraction in the city. But my personal favorite thing to see, if you're just driving through Chicago and you have 10 minutes and that's it, the Tribune Tower. I love that building. Have you ever been to the Tribune Tower?
I've been there.
Have you ever noticed?
But I wouldn't,
have
thought about, if there was one building to send people to, that would be it. You'd think, the Sears Tower, you can go up and look at the deck.
Sure you can.
And that's fine.
But you know, you can see that from...
Exactly.
20 miles out.
Yeah, the Tribune Tower, to me, you go up there and there are these bits or chunks from all these famous buildings from throughout the world embedded into the stone of this building. So you can see, a little piece of the Great Wall. You can see a little piece of the Taj Mahal. You can see a little piece of the White House. And then they do occasionally pull out one piece and put another one in. So it is kind of a changing exhibit. And to me, that's just kind of a fun thing. I had lived here a long time before I ever found that.
And it's a great work of architecture in its own right.
Absolutely.
Too.
And it's free. Mm-hmm. Just walk right up to it on the sidewalk. It's lit at night. You can check it out anytime.
Right across from the Wrigley Building.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Interesting piece of architecture. Yeah. And that's one thing. I mean, Chicago is known for its architecture. Mm-hmm. Is there anything in here as far as walking tours, anything like that?
There's a boat architectural tour, walking. Actually, the architectural tours, there's so many of them. I just had a little, did a little paragraph on them. Of course, it was much longer before our editor told us we needed to whack it down a little bit. I guess I have a page of organized tours. And some of the coolest organized tours, there's one called Ticker Tape Tours that is of all the exchange, the financial exchanges, Mercantile Exchange, Board of Trade, the options building, that kind of thing. Then there's one that's kind of fun called the Untouchables Tour. That is all the old gangster places. A lot of them are not standing, but they tell you all the old gangster stories. They load you up in a bus that's riddled with bullet holes, and they're all dressed like gangsters, and they talk like gangsters, and sort of treat you like you're a hostage. And
really?
It's kind of a fun one, yeah.
That's the one you'd go after.
Well, I mean, that's,
it's called the Untouchables Tour.
People from outside the area, and from especially outside the country, have that
view of Chicago. The first
thing they mention about Chicago is gangsters. Al Capone.
Absolutely.
And that's something that the city really has tried to play down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the city's not real thrilled about the Untouchables Tour Company, but
they don't.
But it's kind of a fun thing.
They're not listed prominently on,
no,
on the tour.
No, I don't believe so, no.
Are there other gangster-related things that are there?
That's the only one we put in the book. I mean, you can always do a lot of the sites themselves, but most of them are not standing anymore. Mm-hmm. They just, they're old buildings, obviously, and a lot of them have just fallen by the wayside along with progress, but that was kind of a fun one.
How well did you two know Chicago before you worked on that job?
He actually knew it better than I did.
I'm from the south suburbs of Chicago, so, I got around.
Yeah, so I did pick his brain before I began doing it. And obviously Chicago is also, for folks who live in Illinois or live in Champaign especially, all the special events are really kind of a fun thing. You know, to get yourself on the mailing list for the Mayor's Office of Special Events is really a great way to just get a heads up on some of the things going on. You know, again, all of us know about the Taste of Chicago and the Blues Fest and things like that, but they have a lot of fun things. You know, the little dying of the river on St. Patrick's Day, and the German-American Fest, which I think, isn't that the one that Matthew Broderick jumped in on, and Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
On the float. I think so.
Yeah, so, I mean, that, to me, just going up for some of their special events, I mean, look at Chicago right now with all the cows on parade. They just like to do a lot of fun, different events, and they seem to have a lot of really good people in the Office of Special Events right now.
Like I said, different ethnic festivals
creative.
Every weekend.
Absolutely, tons of them. And there's some good ethnic tours even of the city, too, and they're listed in the book also.
And that's certainly not unique to Chicago. If you're planning to go to, you know, Fort Wayne or wherever your destination, Kokomo, find out what their festival schedule is like, and you'll be surprised at what's there. Mm-hmm. There are festivals for different ethnicities. There are a lot of food festivals.
Mm-hmm. Mushrooms, strawberries, pumpkins, I mean, anything you can imagine, somebody in the two states has a festival for it.
What surprised you about Chicago? Anything that you found that you didn't know about?
No, just to me, the idea, once you sit down and start to try to prioritize and focus on, you know, what would you include if you just have, you know, 10 pages or whatever to write about it, how much stuff you have to leave out, and how you could literally eat at a different restaurant for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day and never eat at all of them because they change hands, so many of them change hands so frequently that in a lifetime you could not eat at every place there is to eat in that city.
Which brings me to one chapter that I don't know whether it would be the easiest chapter for you to write or the most challenging.
Champaign-Urbana.
Absolutely. I didn't realize that we have the highest per capita number of restaurants.
Restaurants, absolutely. At the time we wrote the book, I don't know if that's still correct now, if the new figures have come out or not, but that was a really hard one because there were so many things that we wanted to include, and I'm from Rantoul, so I stuck a few things from Rantoul in there, and it was just really tough to keep it down to the correct size and to not leave out any of the things that you really want to have. And, of course, you know, I work at the university. Todd didn't work at the university at the time we were writing the book, but so a lot of the things on the campus are near and dear to my heart. And you know, maybe I notch them up a little rung or two in importance, and it may not be that interesting a sight to somebody who's from out of here. So you had to step back and say, now, wait, would I really want to go to this thing if I didn't have orange and blue, you know, in my body somewhere, yeah.
One of the most difficult things about the Champaign-Urbana chapter is that now, whenever our friends here pick up the book, they immediately go to Champaign-Urbana and say, did you include this?
And, why isn't that in there?
There just wasn't room for everything.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, personal prejudices work in different ways when you're right, but they probably didn't say, you know, Don't let yourself stand in the way of some of the things that are out there because
no, actually they really wanted it to be a personal. That was absolutely what we were told, and that was kind of a concern for us because we'd never written a travel book, we'd never written a reference book before, and we said, you know, we really feel a little uncomfortable with this responsibility because they have, you know, such a skinny net below you that we said, you know, what if it ends up having some things that are very personal for us? And they said that's not a problem. And then our other concern, as Todd mentioned, was the being able to write in our own style.
We're not used to having opinions being former journalists. We have been trying to
blind justice
put those down for a real long time. So that made it
awkward.
Actually, it made it fun.
It was
fun,
but it was awkward occasionally. And we'd say, "Ooh, that just feels funny." Mm-hmm.
I noticed that you also devoted a whole chapter and centered the whole area around Crawfordsville.
Mm-hmm.
Now, being from Indiana, Crawfordsville not a major, major city in Indiana. Wouldn't want to, you know, you wouldn't think of making the hub of your
no,
vacation.
No, but there's
plans.
A lot of fun stuff to do in Crawfordsville. And actually, the reason that I ended up with Crawfordsville was that I was wanting to get in, obviously, the Covered Bridge Festival
and
Billy Creek Village and all that good stuff. And to do that, I had to have that area. Mm-hmm. So I started looking, and I thought, well, I'll see if I can come up with enough. It was a great place to go. I had a wonderful visit there. It was fantastic. It was educational. I got to go to the Ben-Hur Museum, which was really, really a lot of fun. And got to learn a lot about Lew Wallace and all the stuff he did. And it was just beautiful country. And there's so many nice parks in that area that I would go back there. And I have gone back there. And it just really is a fun place to be.
So. We would come back from our weekends and say, you got to go here.
No, mine, this was cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we both were really surprised at what we discovered out there. But I think that when we started doing the book, we thought, Illinois and Indiana, how on earth did they decide to do a book about Illinois
and how are we going to fill it? How are we going to fill it?
It ended up really being surprising at the wealth of stuff that's out there.
And as Todd said, you know, once we picked those eight destinations, we just had to even forget there was anywhere else in the States because then you would just be tearing yourself apart that you weren't covering this or weren't covering that. And so just finally said, you know, just focus on this thing and just do these ones we've chosen as best we can.
We have a caller on line one from Urbana. Welcome to the Afternoon Magazine.
Hi, I don't know if you've mentioned good map sources in your book.
Actually, the books have maps in every chapter. They mark all of the destinations that we suggest, and all of the hotels and restaurants are sketched out enough that you could find them if you're looking for them. And then we have some maps also that would direct you on different tours, like say you just want to do a fall leaves tour, or you want to do an arts and culture kind of a tour, or you have kids and you just want to take your kids to, you know, a bunch of amusement parks or whatever. We've tried to break out some of those, and they tend to either start in one location and loop back to that location, or at least make it so that you could start at one end of the state, say, and work your way through it and hit all the places you'd want to go.
I would say that the publisher was responsible for the maps in the book, and so I don't really have any qualms in saying that the maps that are included here are not to replace your
absolutely
your
roadmap. If you have a roadmap, it should, with the markers on this map, you should be able to find everything.
Well, I wanted to suggest to people who haven't discovered them yet that the DeLorme Company has been working on producing road atlases or atlases for each state. They haven't finished all the states, but they do have Indiana and Illinois.
Oh, great. Are they web-based or?
Pardon?
Are they web-based or print?
They're print.
Okay.
They're the size of the standard Rand McNally-type road atlas with lots and lots of pages. I found that they're not totally accurate for some of the little teeny-tiny back roads, but if you wanted to go to your destinations and just head across country, you can do it with these maps.
That's great.
And they do have all the back roads, yeah.
Yeah, they, as I said, they have made some mistakes. There was one area where we had to take a detour in Indiana, and it turned out they've got the numbering wrong.
Oh, oops.
But, you know, on a grid system, which is what a lot of the two states are done on, you can recover yourself. But it does give people some confidence to head out and just see what's on the back roads. And
absolutely.
We've really enjoyed getting to some other place that way. And we often drive to see family in Ohio, and we've created our own back route variety of ways to go. And we've started stopping at things like cemeteries, because I've discovered that there are cemeteries that have these really cool...
headstones?
But they're made like tree trunks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Apparently there's a whole genre of tree trunk
headstones. How interesting.
And met a friend of mine who happens to be the family history librarian in Kokomo, of all places. Hmm. Apparently that county has one of the nice collections of genealogy stuff. And I hope you mentioned in Fort Wayne that they have I think it's the second largest.
Do you know that that's one of the major tourist attractions in Fort Wayne?
Well, and I can see why.
When I considered going there, I thought, why would somebody make a special trip? But, you know, I guess it's that I'm getting a little bit older and I'm more interested in where I came from. But that's an enormous and wonderful resource for anyone doing their genealogy.
Is that the Lincoln National Insurance Company? Is that who puts that together, or is that something else?
That's something else. You're talking about the Lincoln
genealogy.
Museum.
Okay.
This is part of the Wayne County Public Library.
Right.
And it's housed in that library. It's really, really nice.
Good suggestions. Thanks for your call.
Mm-hmm.
We have another caller on line 4 in Aurora. We'll pick up on that point if you had something else as well. But let's get this call in. We're running a little short on time. Hello.
Yes, hi. As an environmentalist, I wondered if you mentioned the Magic Hedge in Chicago. I say that because with the lakefront, the birding in Chicago in certain areas can be very attractive.
You know what? I've never heard of it. Tell me about it.
Well, to tell you exactly, it's on Montrose Beach, and you take Lakeshore Drive to Montrose Avenue, and you turn east. And I'll quote from this book I'm reading. Beginning in March, migratory birds find refuge at the lake's fronts. Magic Hedge, a small clump of shrubs that provides close-up views of warblers. In the winter, look for rare gulls off the coast near the Magic Hedge and the 55th Street Promontory. scan the harbors and lake for diving birds. The woods in the lagoon area of the wooded area of Jackson Park are the best spots along the entire lake front to view migrating land birds.
That's great.
South of downtown.
This gives me an interesting way to segue into eagle watching. And if you're a birder, I'm sure you're familiar, but also in the Alton area and along the Mississippi River in several places, there are great places to watch for bald eagles. And one of the things that we tried to do with this book is include some helpful tips like this one about eagle watching. If you go in the main seasons for eagle watching, those are December through February, that's a downtime for tourism. So you can find packages through hotels down there that are an excellent value, give you a nice place to stay, take you out to the places that are good for eagle watching, and they package these things, and it's great for us birders.
Thanks for your call.
I'll have to check that out. Well, we're working on the next version of the book, so we'll see if we can't include that.
There isn't a tour for environmentalists or anything like that, is there?
No, this isn't that type of a niche. But one thing we found as we were out doing research, there are so many little niche market travel books that, pet owners, folks who have disabilities, I mean, all sorts of different areas, and you certainly can find plenty to do no matter what your interests or activities or whatever are. But this one was more of a general interest book.
If we had a particular slant, it's probably that as parents of young children, we were really family-oriented, and we really looked for places that you could take your kids.
Are they kid-tested? Did the kids come along on some of these trips?
A couple of times, but not usually.
Boy, we sure got a lot of testimonials when we started asking people about the kids' science museums and, different places that market to kids. People would just rave about them.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised how many places there are to go with your kids that are not that far away, and that's important if you've ever ridden 16 hours in a car with your son. Proximity is important, but you don't have to go that far to find a really good place to take your kids.
And that's where the festivals really come into play a lot. If you asked what are the five things there are in Illinois and Indiana to do, I would say it would be a lot of nature things, a lot of homes of people who were famous or semi-famous in their day, and for whatever reason, their home has been preserved. I mean, there are a lot of those. And we thought it was kind of funny that everywhere we went, the town had some claim to fame. We have the biggest ball of twine in the world, and this house had the first flush toilet in, whatever county, and that kind of thing. But there are a lot of homes, and then there are a lot of amusement parks and things. But the festivals really are one of the main attractions that the two states have to offer, because there are people in these two states like to have fun. They like to get together, and they like to have fun, and they'll look for any goofy reason to celebrate and have a party.
What's the goofiest? Did you run across any that were just, would you celebrate that?
Somewhere, let me think. What would be a funny one? Crawfordsville had quite a few that were entertaining, because they even had like a little tiny strawberry queen and king who were, maybe like 5 or 6 years old. But there was mostly odd fruits and vegetables, mushrooms, hot dogs, any of that kind of thing,
Everybody's favorite fruit or vegetable.
A lot of Civil War days, maple festivals, spinners, weavers, gardening festivals, there are just all kinds of them.
The James Dean Festival is kind of an oddity, not because it celebrates James Dean, who was a great actor and certainly an icon, but because people go there dressed up as James Dean and Marilyn Monroe, and you see these characters walking around. It's kind of odd.
And many other
things. And our own, here they seem perfectly normal to us. Raggedy Ann and Andy, that doesn't sound funny to me at all, but I think other people might think that was kind of an odd festival.
Broomcorn Festival?
Yeah.
Broomcorn?
Get out of the area, people ask those questions.
Exactly.
Well, it's an interesting book. There are lots of things that may not be covered in the book, maybe in another edition.
Absolutely. And we told the editor, we said, what if we miss something? They said, you just catch it the next time. Don't worry about it.
It's part of the Travel Smart series on Illinois and Indiana. It's published by John Muir Publications, authored by Robin Kaler and Todd Wilson from the University of Illinois. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having
us,
Tom.